In 2003, Karen Watson felt the call to go to Iraq to share the gospel. And she was all in. She sold everything that she had, her house, her car, all her possessions, and she took to Iraq only what she could carry in a duffel bag. But she left a letter behind with her minister with instructions to only open it if she died while over there. And in fact, that sadly is what happened. She was killed in Iraq. But when they opened up the letter and read it, it said, "There are no regrets." In Romans chapter 12, Paul writes this, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice." Giving up our bodies for God, serving Him wholeheartedly with all of our soul, mind, heart, and strength. That is what God calls us to do, to be all in for the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is a sacrifice that we are called to in our daily living. But when we hear that word sacrifice, it's easy for us to perhaps think of sacrifice in the kind of casual terms that we often talk about it and use it today. Today we might talk about a basketball player sacrificing their game for the team, or sacrificing this month by giving up sugar, or what happened to me this week in line in Panera Bread. I believe we have a picture. I was standing there in line behind this guy, but there was like 15 feet between him and the counter. And he was clearly making sure that I knew with his body language that he was actually in line, that he wasn't just perusing. And he's 15 feet away. And so I thought, well, what in the world? So I just sat there patiently waiting, sacrificing my time, my energy there as I'm waiting for him. And someone pointed out, this is the same guy that stops 30 feet away from the light right in the middle of the road. The same guy. Well, in ancient society, sacrifice was something that was not viewed casually. It was a very serious thing. The ancient Aztecs had something called a fire sacrifice. They thought that every 52 years that there was a chance, a danger of the world ending. The gods were struggling to hold the world together, and so they needed a human sacrifice to make sure that the world did not end. And incredibly, some people actually volunteered for things like this in ancient society. Other victims were not quite so willing or quite so gung-ho about this. But it was something that certainly when someone heard sacrifice in the ancient world, they knew that it was a serious thing. And in biblical thought, in the Old Testament, if you wanted to give a very serious, devoted, all-in type of sacrifice, the sacrifice that you would likely go to is called the burnt offering. Now, there were different types of sacrifices found in the Old Testament. Some were like a barbecue where you'd go and offer up a lamb or something like that, and you would share a meal with the priest there and share a good piece of meat. But the burnt offering was something that was taken and the whole animal was entirely burnt up. So it wasn't about, you know, where those funds, so to speak, were going to be used, some kind of other purpose. It was entirely for God. Can you imagine just taking that contribution and burning it up today? It'd be kind of interesting for checks. But, you know, we'd say, you know, what's the use of that? Well, this practice of burnt offering goes very far back in the Old Testament. It goes back to the time of Noah. In fact, when God saves Noah and his family and humanity in the ark, when he sends the flood, but he saves Noah, Noah finds grace or favor in the eyes of the Lord. And it says in Genesis chapter 8 that Noah built an altar to the Lord, and he took some of the clean animals and the clean birds, and he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. Which is interesting because there weren't a lot of animals, right, after the flood. But he takes something precious and he gives it up as a burnt offering. Well, the same way, Paul in Romans speaks of giving our lives as a living sacrifice, being all in light of, again, God's mercies. We see that in biblical thought, sacrifices were always done in response to God. Whereas in pagan thought, The view was you offer a sacrifice to try to manipulate the gods or force them to do something for you. But in Christian thought, it is always, this is what God has done. This is now how I will seek to live my life in honor and gratitude for his love, his grace, and his mercy. So we're supposed to live sacrificial lives. But what exactly does that mean in the context of Romans? Well, in this, just like with Noah offering a sacrifice in response to God's salvation, we see that in the context of Romans, when Paul talks about giving our lives as living sacrifices, he too is referencing living this life in response to what God has done for us. And Paul, in particular, was concerned about the spread of the gospel around the world and the proclamation of the gospel. And so in Romans chapter 1, we see that Paul begins this book saying, Paul, a servant of Christ Jesus, called to be an apostle and set apart for what? The gospel of God. So this is what Paul references in his own life as being fundamental to who he is as a person, as a leader. He is an apostle called and set apart for the gospel. And he says in verse 16, for I am what? I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of who? Of God that brings what? Salvation to whom? Everyone who believes. And he says, first to the Jew and then to the Gentile. So Paul cares very deeply about the gospel of Jesus Christ. He wants to see it spread. He wants to see it proclaimed. And he says it's salvation for everyone. The Jews and the Gentiles. Now, why does he mention the Jews and Gentiles? Well, one, because the gospel is indeed universal. But it's also because there were some particular challenges and problems that existed in the church in Rome that was potentially interfering with this gospel to be spread and shared. And all of this passage about living sacrifices must be viewed in light of this. And there's something historically that is helpful to know and understand that was happening there in Rome. So in AD 49, the Roman Emperor Claudius issued a decree kicking all of the Jews out of Rome. And this lasted for 5 years until Claudius died in AD 54. And when an emperor died, all of his edicts went away, and so the Jews were allowed to return. Now imagine what this must have done to the church in Rome. The Jewish people were the first people to whom the gospel went, and then it went to the Gentiles. They had, you know, this historical understanding of God and the scriptures, what we call the Bible, the Old Testament, but they would have been gone for 5 years. So they're totally missing from the church, and who would have taken over? It would have been the Gentiles. They would have been the elders and the preachers and the Bible class teachers and running the whole shebang. And then the Jews are allowed to come back in 5 years later, and Paul writes to Rome after this, and it would have been a very different situation. Why would this have been a challenge? Well, one, let's face it, there were racial tensions that existed between Jews and Gentiles, unfortunately. And we know that human nature being what it is, I mean, has this ever been something that we've struggled with in humanity? Obviously, this is a challenge. So there was the racial tension that existed in this church. But also, it wasn't just racial, because remember, the Jews were the ones who had grown up, so to speak, going to Bible school. The Gentiles hadn't. These were newer Christians. They were new converts. They had grown up, most of them probably worshiping Zeus and Aphrodite and all these pagan gods. And they're the ones running the show? Obviously, this would have presented some challenges, and it did, in fact, in their relationships. And we see that all throughout the book. And Paul deals with these challenges head on. And he does it, I think, in a very brilliant way, because he deals with the various stereotypes that these groups had with one another. First, he speaks to the Jews, basically, and he talks about all the godlessness that's out in the world, which really would have spoken to the Jewish audience, who were very concerned about this. And he says in chapter 1, verse 18, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people. And he goes on and talks about how the people in the world, the Gentiles, even though they should have known God from creation, they neither thanked him. And in fact, they didn't worship the creator, but worshiped what? Created beings. They worshiped animals. They were involved in sexual perversion. And today, if you were to speak on things like that, it'd be like Paul talking about, you know, what's going on with life issues or sexual issues or justice issues. And you could just hear all the church folks saying, yeah, yeah, preach it, Paul. Yeah, they would have been disturbed by this, and rightly so, by all these things going on in their society. And so Paul lays it out. That's wrong. This is not good. They are not following God. And then when he concludes, the conclusion you're expecting is, and basically all these people are lost, and indeed, he does say that everyone's lost, but the conclusion that he actually says would have been very surprising, because in chapter 2, notice what he says. He says, speaking to the Jewish people here, you therefore have no excuse. Why? Because you do the very same things. What? As these people engage in sexual immorality and worshiping crocodiles and animals and all this kind of stuff, we're the same boat as them? And Paul says, yeah. Maybe they didn't do those exact same things, but he says, you've stolen, you've lied, you've cheated, you've done things against God, and therefore he concludes, everyone is lost, all have sinned, and all need this gospel of Jesus Christ. So he speaks to the Jewish people directly. But also in chapter 11, we see that he speaks to the Gentiles directly. Chapter 11, verse 13, he says, in case we missed it, I am talking to you, Gentiles. And this is what he said. Do not consider yourself to be superior to those other branches of the Jewish people. So both historically as well as what we see happen at the church. Now, after the church began to spread. Now, all the early Christians were Jews. Jesus was Jewish. The apostles were Jewish. All the early church, the first followers, most all of them were Jewish. But over time, we see that more and more Gentiles respond. And many of the Jews, unfortunately, are not. He says, don't get haughty about this. Don't get prideful. Don't think that you're the special chosen ones any more than others. He says, God has a plan for Israel. And God still cares about them and loves them. They're the primary root. You've just been grafted in. So don't get haughty and prideful about your role in this. Know that God has a plan to reach and save everyone. And indeed, he does. All peoples, Jesus Christ cares about. I'm amazed what's going on in the Muslim world today, and which so many people are having dreams, and so many people are coming to faith in Jesus Christ, and God cares about them. And so it is in this context that Paul then urges his brothers and sisters in chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, speaking about all this that he's talked about before, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of what? God's mercy, to do what? Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. And what Paul then does and begins to do, and we see this throughout the New Testament, he takes the language of the temple sacrifice and the priestly duties that were there, and he applies it to daily Christian living, and he applies it to the proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Notice what he says. Offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper what? Worship. Now, I thought that happened in the temple. I thought that was, no, he says, when you offer your bodies like this, this too is your worship. And notice what he says in Romans chapter 15. He said that God gave me what? The priestly duty of doing what? Proclaiming the gospel of God. So that what? The Gentiles might become an offering acceptable to God. So there's a lot of things that we can think of when we talk about offering our bodies as living sacrifices. But here in this context, Paul especially wants them to do this in the proclamation and the sharing of the gospel of God. So what does this look like for our lives? Well, I'd like to share a story with you, for example, from Scotland. And certainly we are very honored and blessed to have Billy and Pinella here from Scotland, doing a wonderful work there, and wonderful things happening in that church in reaching people for Christ. Eric Liddell was the son of missionaries from Scotland. He was born in China, Well, his parents were on mission, and they sent he and his brother back to London, outside of London, and there he went to boarding school. And Eric Little was very gifted physically. He was very fast. He was a very good runner. He was a very good jumper, and he won many competitions, even at a young age, under age 13. And then he went off to college at the University of Edinburgh, and there he began to win race after race, competition after competition. And because of his incredible speed, he became known as the Flying Scotsman, which was the name of a train that was very fast. And because of his fame and popularity, and because of his devout faith, he began to get invitations all across the country to talk about Christ, to share about the gospel of Jesus, and to tell people about his love and salvation. But Eric Little was very shy, and so this was somewhat difficult for him. But he had always wondered why God had given him these gifts, why he had made him so fast. And as he began to get those invitations, he began to conclude that perhaps God had given these gifts to him for a reason, so that he might be used for his glory and to tell people about Jesus Christ. And he was an amazing runner. In one of the races that he ran, he actually fell down right as the race began in the starting blocks. But rather than just quitting, he kind of absurdly decided to go ahead and try to win, to run the race. And in fact, he decided that he was going to try to win the race. And he began to pass from behind one runner after another. And finally, somehow, miraculously, he won the race. And when he got to the finish line, he collapsed. He said, "The first half of the race, I ran as fast as I could. The second half, God helped me to run faster." And in 1923, Little found out that the Olympics that were going to happen in 1924, that those Olympics for the 100-meter race, which was his best race, that those Olympics were going to be held for that particular race on a Sunday. And Eric Little had a very personal conviction that Sunday was a very devoted day, and he treated it like a Sabbath, and so he decided that he wasn't going to run, which caused great outcry to everyone across the country. But he decided instead to run the 400-meter race. And so he trained and practiced for that. And as he began that race, he started out really fast. In fact, observers said, he's making a rookie mistake, because, as you know, the 400-meter, it's four times as long as 100-meter. You have to pace yourself. But he started out super fast. But then he began to not only not die down, but he began to accelerate. And he began to run even faster, until he actually won the race by an absurd 5 meters ahead of anyone else. And Eric Little, whose story is captured in the movie Chariots of Fire, said, "When I run, I follow God." He said, "God made me fast, but he also made me with a purpose. And that purpose is to honor and glory God." And he said, "When I run, I feel God's pleasure." You see, Eric was using his body to bring glory and honor to God. And he used this to proclaim the gospel to those around him. And the next day, when the 100 meters was being competed in, Little was miles away, preaching at a church in Paris and sharing the gospel. For him, that sacrifice was worth it. And he used his body to proclaim the gospel. Now, this kind of sacrifice requires a different kind of thinking, a thinking that is different from the world. Because who in their right mind would give up the glory and the honor of an Olympic medal simply because you didn't want to run on Sunday? You know, I love Chick-fil-A, but I get frustrated sometimes because on Sundays, they're closed. Paul says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Are there worldly things today that get in the way of our glorifying God? Yes. How's our commitment level? Well, oftentimes it's very low. Sometimes, at least speaking personally, it stinks. But here, this kind of commitment, it goes far more than church attendance. It has to do with our heart and our spirit and our attitude and how we act and how we live our lives and how we treat others around us. And this is why Paul says, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought. It's a history of humanity to divide and discriminate based on things like race and class and social position, education and achievement. I mean, people don't divide on these things today, do they? And perhaps today we divide on politics more than anything else. I saw just yesterday, it was a post, and it was between Christians, and it was about this issue. I won't mention it because I'll lose half of you immediately, but they were cursing at one another. They had like stars and asterisks and all that, but they were cursing at one another. And Paul says, this ought not be. This is interfering with the gospel being spread, how you live and act and how you treat one another. And sometimes the greatest sacrifice is keeping our mouth shut, so that we don't alienate people, and so that they remain open to the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is why Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 10, be devoted to one another in love. You see, it was the lack of the Romans' love for one another that was interfering with the spread of the gospel. But when we do share the gospel with love, it is a great and powerful thing. In the 1990s, there was a mission team from Texas that went to Russia after the fall of the wall. And one of those families, actually a woman on this trip, made a connection there with one of the families in Samara, Russia. And this woman was very drawn to this family, and they were drawn to her. And in fact, she asked this family if she could take their 7-year-old son back with her to the United States for 6 months. Now, I've got a 6-year-old daughter. I can't imagine her leaving for 6 months. She'd probably go, knowing Kaylee. But trusting her with anyone for 6 months, this is amazing. But this young boy went. And in fact, when he was going to the security there at the airport, and you know, after the security, people can't see you, you can pass behind that. So when he was about to pass behind that, he turned around and he yelled at his parents. He said, I will never forget you. He thought that he'd never see his parents again. But he went, and there that love of that family and that love of that church touched this young boy's heart. And over the years, he came to follow Christ, was baptized into Christ. And he grew up and he started a wonderful youth camp in Samara, Russia, his hometown. He's part of the Moscow Church of Christ. And that youth camp started out with 10 or 20 kids and now is reaching many, many teens for Jesus Christ. And that young man's name, Ilya, who is with us here this morning. And I was actually telling this story in Moscow. I was there preaching, and I said, you know, what would make someone, you know, give up their child like this? And Ilya's parents were there. I didn't know this. And his mother stood up right in the middle. She said, I just felt the incredible love of this family and this church. My friends, genuine love can't be faked. People can know the real thing when they see it, and they know when we're not genuine, sincere. But genuine care and love for people is so rare today that it can impact the world in a profound way for Jesus Christ. And this is why Paul says, be devoted to one another in love. This will cause the gospel to be spread. So how do we do this today, and what are the opportunities? Well, we have opportunities to show love and kindness and share the gospel every day. There are some incredible works that are done by this church. Things, opportunities that God gives us in our daily lives. This morning, I want to share with you an additional opportunity that has to do with Croatia. A few summers ago, our family went on a mission ministry trip to about 6 different countries, and one of those countries was Croatia. And Croatia is a beautiful country. It has places like a Colosseum in Pula, which is the most intact Colosseum there of the Roman time period. Diocletian's Palace, the Roman Emperor. Dubrovnik, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. It looks like a CGI creation with this blue golden water and these stone walls. It's an incredible place. And these Plitvice lakes, I can't say any of the terms, but it's incredibly beautiful. And it's an amazing country. But what is more amazing is what God is doing in this place with some wonderful, devoted, dedicated leaders. Now, when I went to Croatia, and we went to these different countries, next slide. This was not a big sacrifice for me because I grew up going on mission trips, and it was something that was a great experience for me, and I wanted my family to experience this. Now, my wife, on the other hand, is from Iowa. She has not traveled a whole lot in the world, and we had three kids, the youngest at that time, so was 5 years old, and so going around to six different countries, this was a sacrifice on her part. I still can't believe she said yes, but she said yes, and so that was a wonderful blessing. And there we met some wonderful people, but one of the places that I had not gone before was Croatia. And I was told, James, this is a great place to go. Great place to go with your family. They're doing some wonderful things there. They worked well, together well. They're loving, and they're seeking to share the gospel. They're starting new churches, doing some wonderful works. And so we went there, and in fact, God did some amazing things there and opened some great doors. And so I want to share with you an opportunity that exists there. And that opportunity has to do with going there and sharing the gospel, using the Story Redemption film series, and helping people practice their English. So let's show this short video. It's an invitation from one of the leaders there, Juro Lazar, Director of Croatia for Christ. And so, never know about technology, but let's see if we can.
Hello, everybody. My name is Juro Lazar, and I'm Executive Director of Croatia for Christ Ministry. We started to broadcast our biblical messages on local TV stations. We're doing that in the cities and the areas where we have local churches. So we're providing new people for the Churches of Christ in whole Croatia. We're using the Story of Redemption. People are calling us, and then we are sending a New Testament. Along with that, we are putting inside the envelope a letter from the local preacher. So we introduce our churches with the New Testament to a local community. We are using the Story of Redemption film series as our own TV outreach, and we're grateful for that. But what we would like to do, we would like to invite maybe you guys from America, from the churches all over the country, especially from the Fairfax Church of Christ, from Virginia, if you would like to join us, and we would like to start something similar to Let's Start Talking with the Story of Redemption. People need and people like to learn English because we are part of the small nation. We're speaking one small language, and in today, global world, you need to learn English. In order to do that, we need your help. We need more teams coming over here. We're very excited what's going on here in Croatia. We can see that God is working very powerfully. I believe that if we all work together in order to bring Christ to local people, we can accomplish way much more than we could ever imagine.
Well, we are so grateful and thankful to the Fairfax Church and to many of you individually who are supporting this work and ministry, and so thankful and honored by that. And we're excited about looking at taking a team to Croatia to help share the gospel. And what they've asked us to do is to come and to go there for about a week's time And they'll invite seekers in, people who have seen the TV broadcast, which they have, people from social media, people from personal contacts, to go to, and one, there's several places, but one place is right on the coast, right on the beach, at a beautiful location, invite people in, and have about half a day of practicing English, using the story of redemption. They also want to have singing. That's another way that they learn songs, is actually singing Christian songs, and then to spend some informal time where there's an opportunity to show just love, genuine care, and a blessing to those that are there, and then some activities in the evening. So this is something that most everyone can do. I mean, here, first of all, speaks English. Raise your hand. Okay, good. You're still a candidate. Who here can play or watch a short video? Raise your hand. Okay, good. Who here likes going to beautiful places and spending time at beautiful places? Raise your hand. All right, you're all still candidates, so that's great. We're going to have 500 people go on this mission trip. Isn't that fantastic? I will tell you, though, there's a great opportunity there and something which you never could have dreamed of. They were transitioning from a radio ministry to a TV ministry, and we just happened, God just opened the door for us to show up the right place at the right time, which is, isn't that what he does, right? Far more than we ever dream or hope or ask for. I would tell you, though, going on mission can be a challenge. When we first went to Croatia, and we had a lot of things that were planned, but this was kind of an informal trip. I'd never been there before, and I asked Jura if we could go and visit. He said, yeah, sure, but he said, you know what, I'm not going to be able to be there at the airport, but I'll send someone to pick you up, and they'll have your picture, and I'll be like, sure, you know, I've been around the world, no worries. So we go, and this couple, nice couple comes, picks us up at the airport, and we get in. They don't speak a lot of English, but we're there. They seem nice and friendly and talking. And then it comes out that they're actually like Friendspeak readers. They're practicing it, and so they're not part of the church. So my wife turns to me. She says, "They're not Christians." I said, "What? What are we doing here?" And it was about 8 o'clock at night, and the kids and I had not eaten, which somehow is important to mothers. I don't know why, but the place where we were going to go and to stay, it was booked up, so we had to go someplace else. They wanted money up front, and of course, we're going to a lot of different countries. I didn't have money for the whole week up front. The ATM was closed, so I had to hand over my passport to this one, which is common in hotels in Europe, but my wife's like, well, you're handing the passport? What is going on? And so, yes, I hand over my passport, and the girls still have it eaten. Things are not quite as first expected, and I could tell my wife is getting upset. And I said, honey, what's wrong? She said, nothing about this is okay. I said, what can I do? She said, fix this now. But you know what? This ended up being one of the most fantastic experiences for our family. And when at the end of the trip, when we asked our girls, we said, you know, where did you see God at work? Where did you see something unexpected happen? They said Croatia. Because when we go on mission for God, when we sacrifice, when we go outside of our comfort zone to do something great for God, God will bless us. Even the smallest effort, he will bless us greatly in this. And our lives will be blessed. And people will be reached with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We have to trust and believe that God will be with us. In the story of Abraham and Isaac, God told Abraham, go take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah and sacrifice him there as a burnt offering. I can't imagine getting this command from God. But God tells him this command. And Abraham, I'm sure he doesn't know what to think of this, but he's going to be obedient to God. And he is about to bring that knife down on his son's chest, and the angel of the Lord stays his hand, and God says, now I know that you fear me because you did not withhold your only son from me. And it says that there was an animal that Abraham saw caught in the thickets, and he took that animal and he offered it to God as a burnt offering instead of his son. My friends, God has sacrificed his son for us. And what he asks us to do is to sacrifice our bodies, our lives, our time, money, energy, and effort to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with others and tell them about the same love and mercy that we've experienced. This morning, I hope you've come to know Jesus Christ, someone working in your life. Hope that this morning that God has pricked your heart to want to serve him more fully. All of us can surely do more in response to what God has already done for us. If there's any need that you have, please come as together we stand and sing.